This interview podcast was recorded at the Coalition for Networked Information Fall 2011 meeting. I'm Jerry Bain for EDUCAUSE. EDUCAUSE podcasts are sponsored by Moran Technology Consulting, providing management and IT consulting services to higher education institutions around the world. MoranTechnology.com. The digital preservation landscape continues to be complex and challenging, and one person who has firsthand experience with these complexities is Martha Anderson. Anderson is director of the National Digital Information Infrastructure and Preservation Program at the Library of Congress. Can you describe the role of the Library of Congress in digital preservation? Do you set an agenda? Do you do all the preservation yourself? Or do you work with partners in collaboration?
I would say that the role of the Library of Congress has been to be the convener and the catalyst. We definitely work across as many organizations as we can recruit to be interested in this work and to take on roles in digital preservation. I would say the beginning of the NDIP program, the National Digital Information Infrastructure and Preservation Program, we were funded by Congress to seed work. But from the very beginning, we consulted very broadly with stakeholders, libraries, archives, content creators, users of content, legal staff and experts in things like copyright, technical experts in how to store things, that sort of thing. So it's been a consultation ever since 2001 when the program began, continues to be a consultation. And in 2010, after we had been working with various partnerships through the projects, we actually funded 70 projects through those years. We stood up something called the National Digital Stewardship Alliance, and it is growing very fast. People are very engaged in this concept and in this idea. We today have about 110 organizations who are members, and through their reach extends, because some of them are cooperatives or consortium, their reach extends to over 1,000 organizations across the United States. So it's a pretty broad organization. So as far as an agenda, I think the members of that organization are beginning to craft an agenda of what is most important as they see it, as they work together across these different disciplines.
When you talk about preserving digital information, do you think of it in traditional library terms, preserving the content for the ages? I mean, what is realistic since technology changes so quickly?
One of the ways we think about digital preservation is we think of it as a state that is achieved through a series of actions with digital content over the whole life cycle of content. So actions that are taken when the content is created, actions that are taken when it is passed from the hands of the creator to the publisher in a traditional sort of sense, or when it's passed from the creator to the web, if they're publishing it themselves, and then when it passes to libraries and archives. We also have new kind of players in this space. We have data centers now, which is not necessarily a strictly library and archive kind of function. So we're seeing that. But preserving is an ongoing process. And so the last couple of years, we've thought of it more as a relay race than an actual fixed event in time. Each generation will pick up the baton and run with what it knows and what it learns, and hopefully be able to pass on to the next generation something that can be sustained yet another generation. So a lot of times people say to me, one time I was interviewed and somebody said, "So you're going to keep it forever?" And I just blurted out and said, "There really isn't a forever. It's as long as there are committed organizations that are interested in learning about the content and taking responsibility for it. And then when they can no longer do it, finding someone else who can take responsibility."
Who are the major funders of digital preservation in the U.S., and how does this differ from programs in other countries?
Okay. Well, we were very fortunate early on that Congress put up a substantial amount of seed money by chartering the NDIP program at the library. And That seed money was to start the work, to catalyze the work, and to get it going on a national scale. Now, today, as we worked on a national scale, we also always talked about distributing the work, sharing the work. So today in the United States, I think there's a real mix of funders. There are public funding through organizations like IMLS for libraries and museums. There is funding for preservation and access through the National Endowment for the Humanities. There are some very good funding opportunities with private foundations who have come into this space and who support the space usually in terms of supporting scholarship. So we see that kind of a distributed mix of funders these days. There's not that much funding coming from the library itself these days. We have used the initial amount of funding and we got it matched to a certain extent. But that seeded a lot of activity and people are able now, I think, to look more broadly. But in Europe, I think it's still a little more centralized through, especially in the UK, through JISC, which is their organization very similar to our National Science Foundation, and through the European Union. The European Union continues to fund, not on a grand scale, but they do continue to have solid amounts of funding that they put toward digital preservation projects. But I think what we'd like everyone to understand is we are moving beyond the project into the program. We actually no longer need to think of this as a science experiment. We need to think of it as our true action and commitment. So as we seek funding, we need to seek it in ways that support our ongoing work. And it may be that it comes from state legislatures eventually and from university foundations and from more federal agencies. So we'll see a mix of that, I think.
Since you represent a library, many people might think that the library's focus is on preserving texts, but your initiative actually focuses on a wide range of media. Can you describe them?
Yeah, I like to think of text as like the simple case for us. I am a data geek by love and training, so I love marked up text. But the program, when we began at the library, we looked across what was happening in the information space. And there was no YouTube, there was no Flickr, there were no Google Maps, there was no Twitter, no Facebook, none of that was in play, no iPods even, when we began the program. So we've seen a real revolution in the way people create and consume information. And at the time we looked and we said, let's try to have the broadest view we can of content. Libraries have always collected maps. Well, the new form of maps are geospatial data. So that became an area of focus for the program. Libraries had always collected video and film, and so we went into that area as well. We, of course, looked at image collections because most of them now are being created digitally. There are digital cameras. Oh, and the other area, which is, I almost forgot it, and it's huge, is what's published on the web. So we looked at websites as a type of data type in terms of no matter what the subject, what would we collect from the web? So we've had a lot of projects with public policy and government data. We're seeing some new projects emerging around creative data, but again, the rights issues there tend to still be put the brakes on that a little bit in terms of really collecting broadly, but there is a high interest in that.
Martha Anderson, Director of the National Digital Information Infrastructure and Preservation Program at the Library of Congress. EDUCAUSE podcasts are sponsored by Moran Technology Consulting. I'm Jerry Bain for EDUCAUSE. Thanks for listening.